is in the Holy Quran, making him the most mentioned prophet of all in the Holy Book of Allah. The literal meaning of the word Quran is the which is being read. The word Quran is repeated 70 times in the Book of Allah itself. The month of Ramadan is the only month of the year mentioned in the Holy Quran in verse 185 of Chapter Al-Baqarah, second chapter. This voice is reaching you from the capital Tehran, ready to share a lineup filled with meaning with you. Our upcoming program is Viewpoints, a powerful roundtable where today's most pressing issues from the Islamic world take center stage. From religion to politics, culture to society, we unpack what matters most with a special focus on the latest headlines from Muslim communities across the globe. Following this program, we have another segment of radio productions for this hour. Then it's time for The Teacher, a deep and enriching review of Islamic and Shia theology and ethics. Join our hosts and scholars as they walk us through key principles that shape a conscious and faith-filled life. Coming up next, it's Viewpoints. Stay with us.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atar, the host of this program. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. With me in the studio, I have Sayyid Mahdi and Sister Zainab. Sayyid Mahdi, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Sister Zainab, salam alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam, brother.
So, how are you doing? How's life?
Everything's good, right?
Sayyid, what
yes,
about you?
Alhamdulillah, it's good.
Are you sure?
Yes, it's
no
excellent.
Sleep problem, no nothing?
No, everything is really nice.
Okay. It's Adam in Iran. The school days started in Iran. So many families and parents have problem with early waking up and taking the kids to the school. Happy for the kids, alhamdulillah. All right, in today's discussion, I want to talk about the two-state solution and end to the Israel-Palestine issue. Isn't it a trick to legitimize the existence of Israel? So this question goes to the very heart of the conflict's narrative and power dynamics. Sister Zainab and Sayyid Mehdi, the two-state solution, which was once, an international consensus, is now viewed by a growing number of Palestinians and analysts as either obsolete or a deliberate deception. So, is it so, Sister Zainab?
Okay, so where do we start? Yeah, so once upon a time, after the, the unjust and violent taking of Palestinian lands in 1948, when the Zionist entity imposed itself and seized lands there. Once upon a time, there were still a few more bits of that occupied land that the Palestinian people could have claimed, could have taken. But of course, we now know that just a few days ago, in fact, the Knesset, in the Zionist entity, they, but majority vote of like something like 72 to 13, something like that, huge majority vote, decided to annex the rest of the West Bank now, basically. So I don't know where they're going to put this state of Palestine if they want to have a two-state solution. Gaza's destroyed. So I don't know. Literally, they have a football field. But that's me being very cynical.
Donald Trump has said we'll turn it into amusement parks or something like that. Okay, on the graves of the children. Okay, so Sid, this is really funny that some people still have hope in the U.S. and its allies that the two-state solution will solve the problem in the region.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because as time moves forward, we're kind of noticing the reality of the hypocrisy that has always been there, right? So in the past 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, two-state solution, was something that everybody was trying to accomplish. It was one of the main talking points of the United States of America. You know, Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, and all of Bill Clinton really took it to a different level with the two-state solution, where it almost seemed possible that something like this was going to happen.
At the time of Yasser Arafat, isn't it?
At the time of, towards the end of Yasser Arafat, yes, and the Camp David Accord,
Camp David, Oslo Accords,
and all these things. And now, you know, decades after that whole mirage and facade and kind of like a show that they put on, you see what the reality of the matter is, that they never wanted a two-state solution. They were just buying time. And even now, for example, if you see that the UK or France or Australia or Canada have bothered to try to recognize the state of Palestine, it's really sad that it took these people 76 years to recognize the original state that was there from the beginning. And not only did that, you know, it took tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people to die before they... And as Sister said, is now that you are recognizing the state of Palestine, what are you recognizing? You're going to annex the West Bank so that there's no Palestine there. At the same, you know, you took the rest of Palestine, called it Israel, and finally you took the Gaza Strip and you destroyed it.
Very much close to Bantustan model. Bantustan model in South Africa, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So the islands and these connected ones,
Bantustan model was something that it was like 10 years ago. Now it's nothing model.
Yes.
It's everything is Israel's, you know? It's gone past the Bantustan model. And that's what their whole purpose was, right?
Yes.
Is to slowly, and it's really interesting, Imam Khomeini, you know, Allah have mercy on him, he called the Zionist regime a cancer. And when you look at the map of Palestine and what the Zionist regime has done over the last few decades, it is like cancer. It has taken over these small, you know, pieces, one after the other, one after the other, until now it is practically eating everything up. And moving on to the rest of the region.
Okay, just look at the beautiful speech by the late Imam Khomeini more than 40 years ago. Let's say Israel will not be satisfied by occupying only Palestine. It will come one by one to Syria, Iraq, Jordan. Okay, one by one it will come. And this is what they are after, the greater map of Israel or something like that. Okay, so do you absolutely believe that the two-state solution is a trick to legitimize Israel, says Sister Zainab? And if yes, what is the logic behind it?
Well, in a sense, the two-state solution that obviously... Now, for example, this year, there was a conference in July this year that was co-hosted by France and Saudi Arabia, and so they arrived at the New York Declaration, which is basically recognizing Palestinian statehood, and this declaration is supposed to outline tangible, time-bound, and irreversible steps towards a two-state solution. But of course, when we look at the facts on the ground, there's no more territory for the Palestinians anyway. So again, I see this as a vacuous posturing by these 142 nations. I mean, there'll be some in there that have agreed to it, even though they actually want us, just a Palestinian state and no Zionist entity anyway. But this is sort of, it makes them look good. But it's a very strange thing. Will the Palestinian state now exist solely in its representations via Palestinian embassies around the world? Is that the Palestinian state without a territory?
Okay, that's it. We call it the moral storm shelter. It provides a diplomatic cover of the Western nations. They can claim to support peace and political solution by endorsing the two-state solution while simultaneously supporting Israel materially and politically as it destroys the very possibility of that solution to the ground or on the ground.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
So morally speaking, for example, some countries around the Islamic Republic of Iran come and say, okay, we support the people of Palestine, but behind the scene, they're hand in hand in terms of transactions and the business with Israel without boycotting or embargo or something like that. This is a legitimation to Nakba, isn't it? Said Mehdi.
This is what, to Nakba?
the legitimation to Lekbat? It's legitimized, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the two-state solution, like, you know, I think we've said so far, it was this kind of a show to try to give more time to Israel to be able to expand as fast as it could without raising too much alarm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the big miscalculations that the Zionist regime has done in this post-October 7th two-year genocide is that they have come out way too violent, way too brazen, and it has caused alarm.
Yes.
This was a strategic miscalculation. They should have done what they've been doing, you know, for the last 60, 70 years, which is slow and steady, and try not to cause too much alarm.
All right.
Until they, but so anyways, you know, they say that in the Holy Quran, it says that they plan and then the Almighty Allah plans. And so via their own hands, they have not only destroyed the two-state solution, but any kind of legitimacy that the world might have given to the Zionist regime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nakba is, I think, is going, you know, way farther ahead.
Yes.
From it has crossed the limits of Nakba.
Yes.
You know, at least in the Nakba, you had millions of people that were, yes, they were kicked out of their homes. They were, you know, made put into exile. But at least they weren't killed, you know. Now
yes.
It's to the point where it's
that's
like,
a genocide.
Listen, you know, we don't care whether you you leave or you don't leave. We'll kill you either way. And it's really unfortunate this is where. And to now to start talking about two-state solution is ridiculous, you know, as you've killed all the people of the other state.
Yes. So what's the solution now? So about maybe 8,000 people or something are living in 100 kilometers or something in a building on the blocks. And they are, you know, surrounded by the Israeli forces over there, bombarded every day. You know, taking hostages. This is what they're doing, okay? Taking the children hostages. So whatever their national force is on the Israel, they start killing more and more by the people of Palestine.
What's really amazing, okay. Before I pass it on, you know, back to you, what's
yes.
really amazing is that one of the objectives of the Zionist regime was to destroy Hamas after 2 years and all of this that has been done there. The Hamas people are still like, you know, the way it was 1 year ago. And it's really shameful
yes.
for the Zionist regime that
yes.
they haven't been able to do anything about it.
So the true struggle by the Hamas and the other people for a decolonized state is authentic, isn't it? Is Sister Zaina?
Yeah,
so
well,
decolonize the state, absolutely, okay?
Well, look, this is meant to be actually recognized in international law anyway,
mm-hmm.
that any people that is oppressed and subjugated, that has its territory seized, actually has a right to, in a sense, defend itself, defend its territory. So this is not unusual. And if we, for example, if we were to say to any person who's, let's say, not Palestinian, so I sometimes say if I were speaking to, for example, an Australian person, imagine, let's say, the Zionists come to, like, Western Australia, that's where my kids are at the moment, and they just come in and you've got militia come in and
mm-hmm.
kick you out of your house and start killing people, and what are you going to do? You're going to think that this is incredibly unjust and this is not right, and you're going to actually form your own sort of groups of resistance.
Oh, right.
This is the way human beings behave. We must defend ourselves and our families.
All right, that's it. And you think that Israel, by occupying this land, at the end of the day, step by step, we come to the other lands in the region too, isn't it?
Well, they already are. Obviously, that we know that they've already had part of the Syrian territory for quite a while.
Yes.
They
were the Qatar,
Islamic
Republic.
They've now taken more. And in de facto, they actually have been sort of occupying part of southern Lebanon too.
Mm-hmm.
So they are actually this. So, and we know that we've seen their plan for greater Israel. So, yeah, they want more.
Okay. That's right. All right. So, for the Palestinian resistance and its supporters, the two-state solution is not an end to the issue. It is a mechanism designed to force them to surrender their fundamental rights and the right of the return for the refugees and the right, you know, exchange for a hollowed-out entity that legitimized the Zionist project. The true end to this issue, I think, from this viewpoint, is the complete decolonization of Palestine and the establishment of a just political system for all these people. Now that this program is on air, okay, the peace treaty might be signed between Hamas and Zionist regime, because now that we are recording, endorsed by Donald Trump, some negotiations are going on. But still, I think this is not the final solution to the problem in the region. Said Mehdi, thank you very much for
You're
nice
welcome.
Elaboration, Sister Zainab, too. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me. And I try to remember not to take anything for granted. 'Cause I know that one day, suddenly, this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you to be pleased with me. Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close, close to you throughout my life.
Travel south, starting from Tehran. Drive for about 450 kilometers and you reach Isfahan. But don't stop yet. Go yet another 25 kilometers east and you'll reach our destination, the city of Najafabad. Najafabad was first established by Shah Abbas the Great in the 16th century. That's about 400 years ago during the Safavid period, and has many beautiful castles and buildings within. Today we're going to show you three of them: the Nurian House, the Husnije Caravanserai, and the Ibrahim Khan Citadel, starting with the last one.
An enclosed space of about 1.5 hectares with winding alleys and time-worn walls that remind you of the historic forts of old Persia. This is the Ibrahim Khan Citadel. That's about 10 kilometers to the west of the city of Najafabad in the province of Isfahan. Apparently, this small citadel has well over 40 houses, some of which were still occupied up to about 30 years ago.
Before these 6-meter-high walls and watchtowers were built to secure the safety of these houses, this was a small village known as Shahdan, which is why sometimes this whole structure is called the Shahdan Citadel. This is one of the few small citadels that was built during the Zand and Qajar dynasty for commoners, who were mostly farmers and animal breeders. Each adobe house has two small rooms, a kitchen and a small yard. You can also see wells in some of the remaining houses. The architecture of a citadel reflects not only the defense tactics of each historic period, but also the social structure and economic status of the people living at that time. Stand still and look around. Could you have lived as they did, sharing everything in peace and tranquility? With that said, it is time to head back into the city of Najafabad to pay a visit to our next location, that is the Nurian House. The Nurian House can be found in one of the historic neighborhoods of Najafabad called Nasir. As soon as you open the age-old wooden doors, you are led into the main courtyard through a vestibule with big flooring. The Nurian House was made in the image of the homes built on the central Iranian plateau. The courtyard is decorated with mirror flower beds to the sides and a beautiful heart-shaped miniature stone pool at the center. The facade of the main building is eye-catching indeed and is a modest example of the native architectural designs in this region. The porch, with its four delicately decorated arabesque capital head pillars, leads to the main room of the outer courtyard through wooden lattice doors with paisley designs. The ceiling of the porch is also decorated with 8-point geometric inlays. In addition to the inner and outer courtyards, you can also pay a visit to the kitchen that's undergone restoration and has a working oven, ventilation, and a display of the varying kitchenware used by the women of the household. The small stony pool is probably where watermelons were floated to cool during the summer. In the good old days, family and friends would gather around the pool and enjoy each other's company. We have to say goodbye to the Nurian House as well, if we want to reach our final stop in time. Our last destination is a memento from the Safavid period that was registered on Iran's list of National Heritage in 2000. There are many caravans. These caravanserais were a place of culture, trade, tradition, and most importantly, a safe haven for any caravan or traveler who passed by. And perhaps the most interesting of these places were the ones that were built in the middle of the desert, in the middle. Caravanserai literally means a dwelling for caravans. They are widely known for their remarkable architecture that's based on geometric equilibrium, each having a unique character. The court is normally surrounded with bedrooms, depots, and bathrooms. Here too, you can see ceilings blackened by soot, a common sight in dusty places like this. The soot helped prevent dust falling on the heads and torsos of visitors who sought shelter and rest in these chambers and under these small domes. Unfortunately, except for some of the really well-known caravanserais, especially those that are inside urban areas, many have been forgotten over the course of time. This is Golnar Farnoodi for Iran.
selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? Of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، ناچدهی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
We once had a teacher of teachers. You changed the world for the better.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an analysis and introduction into the most important Islamic teachings and concepts. I am Atah, the host of this program. Sheikh Danish and Sheikh Fadai are invited to today's discussion. Sheikh Danish, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
So, how are you doing, Sheikh?
Thank you. Alhamdulillah.
Sheikh Danish, how are you?
Thank you.
Okay. It's a month of Mehr, Adam, and the schools started in Iran, and the parents are busy with taking the kids to the schools. Alhamdulillah, good times for our children in the Islamic land, in the Muslim lands, to pursue knowledge. This is a time of pursuing knowledge for both the students of universities, the schools, and also the house of students. Inshallah, they grow up, spiritually speaking, by the knowledge that they pursue in the life, inshallah. Okay. Fleeing from the battlefield in Islam, especially when you are in the Islamic army or army of Islam, are you allowed to flee from the battlefield? Now we are talking about battlefield, so it has one classic meaning, which was the horse riding, sword, and something like that at the time of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible Imams. But nowadays, the battlefield must be, we can say, that's right, the drones, or they can say missiles or guns or something like that. So even in terms of the soft war, okay, the media war, some people might flee, okay, the battlefield. So are we allowed as Muslims to flee the battlefield or not? Shaykh Fadai, let's start with you. So what about the Holy Quran first? Do we have any Quranic ayah referring to this concept, fleeing the battlefield?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Because of the importance of jihad, the concept of jihad in Islam, we have different verses about jihad, including some verses about fleeing from the battlefield. Of course, when we say importance of jihad is in Islam, it doesn't mean that Islam always seek fighting and war. Yes, we have different verses about jihad and fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But Islam is a peace-seeker religion.
That's right.
But we cannot ignore the reality.
Okay.
If you always claim and shout about peace, doesn't mean that your enemy leave you alone. No. Islam talks about jihad and battlefield a lot because it is a reality.
But what we are not the igniters of the battles and the fights.
Yes.
We have never started a war.
We follow peace.
Defensive war is allowed. That's why.
Peace seeker, okay. But we are good warrior.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
A good warrior, peace seeker.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if they want to attack, we defend. Very good, better
yes.
than them.
Yes.
Stronger
okay.
than them.
All right.
But we do not start war.
Yes.
And when I say we have different verses about jihad, it means that. This is like the diseases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to be ill. We don't want to be sick. But if I'm ignorant about diseases, do not study about that, do not be cautious about that, don't take any medicine and pill when I'm sick, don't do that, so you will get sick. This is reality.
Yes.
Having a lot of the sicknesses and illnesses is the reality. So we have a science named medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of doctors, a lot of researchers, a lot of laboratories. So can we say that all the doctors' offices and laboratories, all of them should be destroyed?
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate diseases.
All right.
Everyone hates diseases.
Okay.
Jihad is like that. But we have a lot of verses. For example, in Surah Anfal, verse 16, we read, وَمَنْ يُوَلِّهِمْ يَوْمَ إِذٍ دُبُرَهُ. If you put your back to your enemy, it means you flee, you escape from the battlefield. And at the end of the verse, we read, فَقَدْ بَعَ بَغَضَبٍ مِّنَ اللَّهُ وَمَأْوَاهُ جَهَنَّمُ.
Mm-hmm.
God would send you to the hell. So this is a punishment. وَلَيْسَ الْمَسِيرُ. When you go to the battlefield, you shouldn't escape from that.
Mm-hmm.
When you escape from the battlefield in order to save your life, it means that my priority is not my religion and faith.
All right.
My priority is my health.
My life.
Is my life, my properties.
Okay.
So to prefer your properties to your faith, this is shirk.
Okay. At the same time, we have to act logically.
Yes.
And reasonably,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. In this verse, we have إِلَّا مُتَحَرِفًا لِقِتَالٍ أَوْ مُتَحَيِّزًا إِلَّا
فَأَتِدْ.
Sometimes you get back, you do reverse actions in order to change the plan.
Okay.
You go to plan B. This is not escaping.
In fact, your war against the enemy must not be the waste of your blood, which
yes.
has no value. It is like committing a suicide, okay?
You withdraw in order to attack.
Attack,
me,
that's right. Okay.
But escaping is something else.
All right.
It is forbidden.
And Sheikh Danish, the battlefields are different now. Does fleeing from the battlefields, we can say, is also true and false true about these new battlefields or not?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So today in the modern world, we have this concept of the soft war,
yes.
where the media narrative becomes important,
yes.
because it becomes important in Jihad-e-Tabin, as the leader of the Islamic Revolution has also pointed out, that today one of the critical obligations for all those who are capable of it is to clarify one's stance, one's position, as the enemies are constantly working to paint a picture of Islam and the believers in such a way that they are always violent. For example, they are doing terrorism. For example, they accuse Hamas of terrorism. Those people who are fighting for their rights, who are fighting to safeguard their honor, who are fighting to live a decent life, are painted as terrorists.
Yes.
And throughout, the colonial project is such that it always tries to change the narrative so that the people are fooled into believing that they are the just people and their opponents are basically violent, uncultured, uncivilized. So the concept of Jihad-e-Tabin is also the same concept, that you have to tell your part of the story. Because we are, as Muslims, we have 1.6 billion people throughout the world, but what do we see as Muslims? That we are the oppressed people. The power resides with the media of the Western civilization. For example, you have these channels, you have these television stations.
That's right.
They're constantly painting Muslims in a bad light. So one part of it is to paint the true picture of Islam, to paint a true picture of belief, and to tell the world that we are not violent people. We are only fighting for our honor. We are fighting for to have a decent life. And we are fighting to attain justice on this earth and to fulfill the mission of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And our message is universal. We are not only concerned about the well-being of Muslims.
All right.
We are concerned about the well-being of the entire humanity.
All right.
And we want betterment of life for everyone,
mm-hmm.
not just a small group of people who are the elites, who want to control the 99% of the world, and they want to fool the rest of humanity into fighting each other.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Maybe the best example in the modern world, especially in the recent years, 1-2 years, is Shahid Yahya Sinwar, who did not flee the battlefield. In fact, Israel, by sending helicopters and making a kind of Hollywood movie out of the last parts of the life of Yahya Sinwar, thought that this would be a victory for the Israel, that he could, for example, kill this commander. But now the conclusion was reversed, because it showed that the commanders who are faithful to their religion, at the same time land, will stand up to the last moments to their lives. So he became the hero, okay? And now everybody knows Yahya Sinwar as the hero, and he was called the hero. So I do want to say, yeah, we are not living in that very much modern world, okay? Even nowadays, battles are real. The people of Gaza battled. You know, the attacks on Islamic Republic of Iran were real. On Qatar, real. Syria, Yemen's attacks are real, okay? So in any part of the world, you could find war. But for a Muslim, not filling the battlefield and protecting his rights and the rights of his people has a different meaning. I mean, religion gives a kind of added value or color beside the nationalistic value, Sheikh Fadai.
I want to recite some other verses about Quran,
okay.
That it's easy for us to understand this concept of fleeing better.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I have to say why do we have this concept of fleeing in Quran a lot? The reason is that it's what you mentioned, because always we have wars,
uh-huh.
and always there are some people who try to escape from the battlefield.
All right.
And escaping is not happens just at the middle of battlefield. Sometimes before that,
uh-huh.
you do not take the responsibilities. You do not enter the battlefield.
Very good.
So
shunning the responsibilities, it's a kind of fleeing.
Escaping from responsibility.
Very good.
You know, the word mukhallafun in Quran,
uh-huh.
if you search it, there are different verses about that. What does it mean, mukhallafun? Mukhallafun means the people who escapes from war and jihad, and they do not take the responsibility not to enter the battlefield and then flee or escape. No, before that, they escape before battlefield happened and started.
Okay.
There are three verses with the same word, mukhallafun. When we check these verses, we can understand the reasons of this escape and the result of this escape. For example, in Surah Toba, verse 81, we read, فَرَحَ الْمُخَلَّفُونَ بِمَقْعَدِهِمْ خِلَافَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ The one who escape and do not take this responsibility, they don't enter the jihad, they are happy not to follow the Prophet. وَكَرِهُ أَن يُجَاهَدُوا بِأَمْوَالِهِمْ وَأَنفُسِهِمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. What is the reason? The reason is that they do not want to sacrifice their bodies and their properties. The problem is that they want to take care of their bodies, not to be injured, not to be killed, and they want to take care of their properties, their houses, their either
attachments in general. Yeah, that's right.
Every material aspect of life.
Yeah, detaching is really difficult.
Yeah, okay. They cannot forget
sacrifice.
About that.
That's
sacrifice
right. Okay.
This is the reason. And the next verse. سيقول لك المخلفون من الأعراب شغلتنا أموالنا وأهلنا. You know, they went to Prophet and they present some excuses. They told Prophet, oh, sorry, we were busy with our properties and families. Quran says this is just excuse. This is not a real reason. You were busy with your family and properties. What about other people?
All right.
What about the warriors? Didn't they have any family? Didn't they have any properties? They sacrificed everything. And you say that you were busy. Like now, we do not get to the battlefield. And always we say, come on, do not fight Israel in Iran.
Yes.
Some people say, why should we attack Israel? If you attack them, they will attack us and we lose our properties and bodies. So this is the exact ayah. Do not fight with batil. Why? Because we want to take care of our bodies and properties. And in the next verse, سيقول المخلفون إذا انطلقتم إلى مغانم لتأخذوها ذرونا نتبعكم. When you do the war, when you fight the enemy and you get some booties, then they come to you. They say, let's share it together.
Yes.
We're with you.
Okay.
You see, they do not want to sacrifice their properties.
Yes.
But if you take some properties, they want to share with
you. Now is the time to share with me the fruits.
So, the main reason is to be selfish.
All right.
When you're selfish, you want everything for yourself.
Of course, in case of Israel, I should say that we never started a war against Israel. Even in the 12-day war against Iran, that was Israel that attacked Iran. 4:30 in the morning, our residential area, our nuclear scientists, our commanders, you know, military commanders. So Islamic Republic of Iran, by the fatwa of our leader, has never been after nuclear bomb or something, or attacking here and there, okay? Our wars has always been defensive war, but we acted great.
Look, by that 12-day war, a lot of people around the world, even in Iran, they realized that why did some people like Jarrah Soleimani and his companions,
Sayyidina Nasrallah,
fought in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iran, because we wanted to stop the enemy in the country that he's busy with war.
Even about Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the first martyrdom anniversary just passed recently, so many people said that he has his own safe place over there, okay? And the videos are produced, for example, out of Beirut or Lebanon or something. But when he was killed and assassinated, they said that it was inside the homeland. You know, and he never fled, you know, we can say the battlefield. He was always the commander in chief.
Operating room.
Yeah, in the operating room, of the battlefield. And so many other shuhada that lost their lives during the battles against Israel. All right. So, detachment from this world and shunning the responsibility, as Sheikh Fadai also said, is itself a kind of fleeing. Having a luxurious lifestyle and just safe and cozy and comfortable place in life. And okay, bless the world. We can say, again, Samut Filatila is a nice one. Just living your all comfortable life, getting to the sea and ocean with all its floods and something like that. Okay, big waves in order to, we can say, get to the people of Gaza and help them. We can say, I think this is the real meaning of sacrifice and not fleeing the battlefield, just getting to the battlefield.
True, and what we see in the Samud Flotilla is that these people who are from different countries, they felt a responsibility towards the people of Gaza who are facing genocide and are suffering daily horrific bombings and murder and mayhem. which is not allowed by international law.
Yes.
Even if you don't believe in any religion, your sense of international law, your sense of decency, your sense of humanity should not allow it. But what we see is that the majority of the Muslim countries are silent. They are going and doing negotiations with the United States president. They are getting plans from there. They are saying that we accept your plans. But these are people who are basically people who are from Western countries. Some of them are Muslims as well, but the majority are human beings who believe in human values. They don't follow the religion of Islam, but they feel a responsibility towards the people of Gaza. And all those people who are participating in propagating this message online are also doing a sort of jihad in the sense that they might face some consequences. Or those people who are participating in protests in these Western countries are also doing a sort of struggle for the cause of humanity.
That's right.
So all of this, everybody, according to their capacities, has to get this message across that this is not acceptable.
All right.
This situation is not acceptable until, unless and until this whole regime of genocide, this Zionist regime is taken apart, inshallah, and we are able to breathe the fresh air and live decently with our neighbors. We don't say that we want to kill Jews. We don't say we want to kill Christians. We want to live in harmony with everyone, with all of humanity. But this oppressive regime is not only humiliating Muslims, but it is also humiliating these European countries. Only yesterday or day before yesterday, this great journalist from America, of course, I don't mean to say that I accept everything that he says. He says that during the 12-day war in the Pentagon, there were Israeli military
operatives,
and analysts and agents who would come and order American military people that you have to provide us with these weapons, you have to attack. And they would shout out this to the American Pentagon people. So he said that I feel humiliated by how Netanyahu is going around the world and saying that I have Trump in my pocket.
All right.
So this is not only humiliation for Muslims, this is humiliation for yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this person correctly pointed out that the way that Israel controls America is a humiliation for the American people. So we don't want war with the American people, but we want to live decently with everybody. But one entity is basically taking us towards war, and it's the elite system, the system that says that some people are better than others.
That's right.
And to run away from this war is basically a sign of weakness and humiliation.
And even the modern battlefield is a social media.
True.
Even one post, you know, over there can help the lives of so many people through enlightenment and awakening. So take care about how the modern battlefields do. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Danish, for a nice elaboration regarding not fleeing the battlefields as a Muslim. It was very kind of you. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of The Teacher. Please, for more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Salam from the heart of Tehran. Whether you're tuning in from across town or across continents, you're listening to Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as al-Hazan in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. Let's take a look at what's coming up. First, it's news time. Then we move to today's special. Up next, another feature from our radio productions. Following that, don't miss Hadith of the Day. So stay with us. The news is next.
The heavens begin to sing. The angels celebrate the birth of a king. A king who outshines the stars of the night. A beacon of hope, you guide us with your light. Blessings of God upon you is my prayer. The earth and the heavens begin to sing. This day we celebrate the birth of a king.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran reiterates that triggering the 2015 nuclear deal snapback mechanism by the European Troika lacks legal basis and calls for termination of all UN sanctions. A pro-Palestinian group discloses identities of 17 Israeli military and intelligence officials involved in the regime's destructive war machine. Pakistan and Afghanistan agree to immediate ceasefire to end deadly border violence that has left dozens dead. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on the World News. Now Iran has once again called for termination of all U.S. Security Council sanctions under Resolution 2231, emphasizing the document has expired and thus its provisions are no longer in effect. In a social media post, Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said that Iran, Russia, and China affirm that in accordance with paragraph 8 of the resolution, all restrictions are terminated as of the 18th of October. He said an attempt by the European Troika to trigger a so-called snapback mechanism of the nuclear deal is a legally and procedurally flawed. Araghchi's remarks follow a joint letter by Iran, Russia, and China to the UN chief, as well as the president of the Security Council, stressing expiration of the resolution which endorsed the 2015 Iran nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. They said the European parties to the deal have failed to implement their obligations, and three countries added E3 did not go through the process stipulated in the dispute resolution mechanism either and are not qualified to invoke its provisions. Political analyst Robert Fantina joined us earlier to discuss the legal basis for this decision taken by the U.S. E3 to reimpose sanctions on Iran despite expiration of Resolution 2231.
Iranian spokespeople have said clearly that the provisions all expired as of the 18th today and that the agreement no longer exists. These countries are trying to implement penalties on Iran for their own lack of adherence to the agreement. It makes no sense. And as you mentioned, the Western nations are trying to, and with some success unfortunately, influence the United Nations in a variety of ways because of their power in the world, these countries' power in the world. But the idea of the sanctions being reimposed and not being dropped, because they have been reimposed, and not being dropped makes no sense from a legal standpoint, because the JCPOA, the UN resolution, which was endorsed by UN Resolution 2331, has expired. So the